Okay. Very good. So the first two weeks we focused on issues in the kitchen which are not necessarily directly related to kashrus. We talked about tovaling kelim. We spoke about overall issues. One correction I have, I'd like to thank Meryl for pointing it out. She wasn't shy about it. That in terms of things that you can have without a hashgacha, so yes, you can have orange juice without a hashgacha. Yes, you can have apple juice without a hashgacha. You can have most canned fruits without a hashgacha, and you can have most dried fruits without a hashgacha. Right? The only, however, when it comes to canned vegetables, it seems that the overall majority of them do require a hashgacha,
which is different than what you said.
Right. I think I had said, and we could check the tape. I think I had said that many canned vegetables don't really require a hashgacha, and the majority in fact do. No, I think largely it's because of the way it's processed. It has to do with the what? Frozen vegetables do not require a hashgacha, assuming that they are, again, whatever the limitations are with fresh vegetables will also be the limitations with frozen vegetables. So if there would be an issue with bugs regarding Brussels sprouts, if there would be an issue with bugs regarding spinach or broccoli, whatever it might be, you don't get it any better.
They said if it's frozen, it's okay to eat fresh.
So,
you can.
What?
So
it's interesting. So I'll just tell you what I have heard. So right now what they're saying is it's the same for both. In terms of what practically, so I had a roommate named Rabbi Tzvi Sabalovsky, and he has a brother-in-law who's a nutritionist, Rick Shields, which is a great name. So his brother-in-law told him that he knows as a fact that when Bodek wanted to learn how to check the vegetables, they went to Bird's Eye to find out how to do it. Right? And the CEO of Bird's Eye was asked, you know, under agricultural law, you're allowed to have a certain percentage of bugs in your vegetables. In fact, when the USDA figures out how much protein are in vegetables, they add a little for the bugs, because that's a pretty high protein source as well. The CEO responded in saying, yeah, the U.S. government will let me have that many, but once my first customer that finds one, that's the end of it. So therefore, many people are in the assumption that Bird's Eye, which I don't see often here in the Colorado, yeah?
You
don't see it as much. Because in New York, for example, chopped spinach, we get Bird's Eye in New York. I've never seen Bird's Eye chopped spinach in Colorado.
No, not chopped
spinach, but other stuff. Right. So in terms of that, so therefore a lot of people say if you're buying Bird's Eye, right, that is the type of brand that even though the hashgacha on Bird's Eye is not one that we normally rely on, you can buy it without a problem. That Bird's Eye can consume.
Any frozen vegetables made by Bird's
Eye? Yes. The assumption is that Bird's Eye cleans. What? So again, so that is the assumption. The assumption is that Bird's Eye does a fine job of cleaning it. That is what I was told in terms of that. Now, we'll discuss a little bit more. I think we've already mentioned this, that there's a difference between whole and chopped.
Right. You can buy any orange.
Cream spinach, and if it only is spinach chopped up really small.
Pureed, chopped, whatever
it is, if it's chopped small enough, then again that would also not be a problem. As we said,
I think is not enough.
Right, that's for sure. You can do that. You could buy fresh spinach, not even bother checking it, and puree it, and it'll be higher in protein than it was beforehand, as we said. So again, it's got to be, to be blunt about it, if there's a bug in it, it's got to be cut in half. It's got to be that fine.
Just cut in half?
That's it. You just got to cut it in half, Aggie. Right.
Just cut it in half.
It's the exact opposite of what they told you as a child. Remember as a child, they always tell you what's worse than finding a worm in an apple?
A half a worm.
Rasa halacha, no, it's better to find a half a worm, actually. So, we don't recommend it, though. We'll put it there. Okay, so in terms of, yes?
But fresh, let's say fresh Brussels sprouts, no.
If you check them.
And you have to peel, how can like, you check Brussels sprouts?
You
should
take it apart.
You soak them in half, and you soak them, and you check the water, and you soak them again. And sometimes they're really clean, and sometimes they're really not. So
they say you chop them in sprouts.
I love Brussels sprouts.
I
just
hate Brussels sprouts. It works out really well.
I love Brussels sprouts. Especially those little ones. Those are excellent. Those are about three times. Excellent. Okay.
So what's the topic tonight?
So up until now, we've been discussing, you know, the kashrus things outside of the standard ones. We have four more weeks to go, as far as I can tell, according to the calendar. I'd like to spend the next two on the real, I hate to say it, the meat and potatoes, but it's more like the milk and meat of the kashrus questions, in terms of you use the milchik spoon for the etc. That's one. And then the last 2 weeks that we're going to spend on specific Shabbos issues. So today I just want to like to focus more on the overall general rules, and maybe next week apply them a little bit more. Milk and meat, you can't have it together because it says in the Torah.
Don't do it three times.
Right. You should not cook a kid in its mother's milk. It says it how many times in the Torah?
Three times.
Three times. Why does it say it three times?
I don't know.
Right, so?
I don't know.
Well, you're about to find out. Today's your lucky day. So Rashi says the reason we say it three times is because?
He couldn't learn the verse to come mix it. Can't eat them. Meat? Milk? Can't eat them together.
Right. So there's three. So the answer is as follows. The reason you can't do it. So let's say, for example, I have a pig. I can't eat the pig. The pig's not kosher. Right? Hope you're taking notes. So that's okay. No eating pig. Stop it.
Yes,
right. However, can I play football with a pig skin?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you use pig skin gloves?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Like, can I get benefit from pig in general?
Yes.
Absolutely. Can I use a facial ointment made out of lard?
If you want.
Wait, why can't you blow a chauffeur with pig
oil? What? What? I don't know.
You're not eating it.
I'm not eating it. Right. So again, all of this, right? If a person needs a valve replacement, can we use a pig heart?
Yes.
Not a problem. There's no problem getting benefit from anything from a non-kosher animal. However, that's not the case when it comes to milk and meat together. So when it comes to milk and meat together, not only can't you eat it, but you also can't get any benefit from it. And also, you're not allowed to cook it together, even if you're not going to eat. This is an issue. There are times when you have somebody who's Jewish who wants to go to a culinary school. So that comes with two problems. One is, if you're going to be good at it, you have to taste the food. And two, the cooking itself is problematic. But so again, if it's just a matter of, you know, they want you to cook pork chops, that's fine. You're allowed to cook pork chops. You're just not allowed to eat it. However, you cannot cook a steak that's been covered in butter. That is the reason for that, because it says it three times to teach us that all three of these things are problematic. Now, there is some discussion as to what is milk and what is meat. It sounds simple enough, but it really isn't. I remember in a previous life, I used to be an attorney. So I was once applying for a position in California. And I was interviewed, and they called me back, and they flew me out to the West Coast. And as was standard with all the New York firms, I had this line where I said, in the event that you intend on taking me out for lunch, please note that I have kosher dietary requirements. But unlike in New York, where everyone knew what this meant, in L.A., at least the firm I was at, had no idea what was going on. So I showed up and, you know, went for a few interviews. Then I said, okay, I want to go out to lunch. And they took me to a absolutely non-kosher restaurant. So I feel like, what are you going to do? Okay, so I'll order, you know, a piece of melon and a cup of Coke. You know, what are we going to do at the end of the day? But this was a very fancy restaurant, and they had, like, a piece of melon with chazer. Coke with chazer. Right? Like there was nothing there, right? It was like that bakery that they had over there, Aginos. It's
changing.
Right? It's time for us to have a trip. So I sat there with this, and I was totally not prepared for this, you know? And so the person says, I'll order this. And they come to me, I said, I'll have nothing. They said, why? So I said, I'm sorry, but I called ahead, and they felt terrible about it. So they called over the waiter. They were very nice. They gave the guy $20. They said, sorry for your bother, but we're not going to be able to eat here. And they said, are there any kosher restaurants here? And I said, yeah, sure, there are. They said, can you tell us how to get there? And with that, we started heading off to Pat's on Pico. So... Right? So as we're driving there, they were very interested. They said, what's kosher? So we began a conversation and, you know, and continued in the restaurant. And in the restaurant, I said, you know, you'll notice about restaurants is, for example, they're either a meat restaurant or a dairy restaurant because we can't have them both together. And the woman said to me, aha, and this is a meat restaurant. I said, no, actually, it's a dairy restaurant. She said, uh-oh, we got some bad news then. I said, what? I said, they're serving fish. So for us, we chuckle at this, but, you know, I guess if you're a vegetarian, not as much, right? The idea of what is defined as meat is really something that we take for granted. So we understand that fish is not considered meat. What about chicken? What?
We consider it meat today.
Right? So the way we hold this, chicken is not meat. Chicken is not meat. It's only mid-derabbanon. Right? Meaning that, I wouldn't say recent. It's been a few good millennia since. So, you know.
It's not the original.
At my age, that doesn't seem recent. But you know, if it's different for you, that's fine. So when we talk about having meat and milk together, we eat meat. We mean like Shlomo, meat. We don't mean chicken. We don't mean anything like that. We mean meat. Now, that's important. Now, the reason that's important, because when we talk about, so what's the difference? So I can't eat it because it's Daraisa, because the Torah says I can't eat it because it's Rabbanan, because the rabbis. Either way, I can't eat it, right? So, yes and no. Either way, you can't eat it. However, the other problems... the problems of cooking it together or the issue of getting benefit out of it, that does not apply to something that is rabbinic. So therefore, if I were to have a chicken and if I would have a chicken patty with cheese on it, so I wouldn't be allowed to eat it, but I could flip that burger and I could sell it to non-Jews. That, in fact, would not be a problem. Because when we talk about meat and milk together and the fact that you can't get any benefit from it, etc., that refers to only meat, not poultry, of course. What about, so let's go back to the next question, what about fish and meat? A common question that we get here.
You can have them together.
So you can, if we can't have them together, why do we all have fish forks?
Yeah, that's a real interesting piece. But we can eat
it. What? That's one answer. So, right. So,
separated because of the bones?
So there's a lot. So the actual reason behind it, the reason is because the Shulchan Aruch quotes that if you eat fish and meat together, you get leprosy. Now, the Mishnah Berurah comments that that's just not true. But we don't at the end of the day. You know, you can have it all you want. Therefore, the Mishnah Berurah says that nowadays, maybe this was a problem years ago, but nowadays it's not a problem. And in fact, he says that you could have fish and meat together, and there really is no need for fish forks. Now, of course, we do have fish forks in our house, and the reason is obvious. I have 5 daughters to marry off, and the last thing I need is for people to know that I'm using my fleshic fork for my fish. Well, I'll have you guys forever then. So, but in terms of technical halacha, really it's okay. So therefore, when the yearly question comes in for the person who puts and I hate saying this word, Worcestershire sauce on their steak.
Right.
So Worcestershire sauce, Lee and Perrins, is OU fish.
Not all of them.
What Lee and Perrins is.
Lee
and Perrins is Heinz is not. What? Right. French doesn't. Well, so again, the question of whether thing was whether you have anchovies, isn't it? I think anchovies is the right. So when you put the Lee and Perrins, which is definitely does have it in it, right? That's if you're going to do the real thing, right? Then you're going to have a problem. So it's interesting that there are opinions out there really that span the globe. There are opinions out there that say that if you put some fish on your steak, that's worse than milk and meat together. Because the idea that something could be batel, if it's less than the 60th, we forget that that's only by isurim, by things that are prohibited. However, this is something that's dangerous. We don't play with danger so much. As opposed to other people who have the opinion you could just put it on. There's really no problem whatsoever.
What makes
whatsoever.
It dangerous? Just what used to be said.
It's that leprosy thing.
That leprosy thing, okay.
I'm not going to play with leprosy. How about you? But I try to keep away from it whenever possible. So in terms of fish and meat together, that is the reason for it. It's not really a halachic reason. It's quoted. It's been quoted hundreds of years ago. And based on that, that is the reason people don't do it. And the truth of the matter is, if you end up in a case of what we call bidyevin, if you've accidentally done it already, then you don't really have to worry about it. It's okay. The Beis Yosef writes that you cannot have fish and milk together.
Why?
So most of the later opinions say that that's a misprint. Because it probably meant to say fish and meat together. That's what it meant to say. The Sfaradim do not assume that way. Sfaradim assume that you cannot have fish and milk together. Which means that if you're a Sephardi, probably the most treif thing you could eat is a bagel, cream cheese, and lox. Because the bagel is probably not Pas Yisrael, and the cream cheese isn't Chol Yisrael, and you're not to have lox and cream cheese together, because that's fish and milk. There's absolutely nothing you can eat if you're a Sephardi when it comes to that.
At the bris.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if Elio is a Sephardi, if Elio is a Sephardi, he's going to be really, really hungry. Right? So that is the assumption. I used to always chuckle at this because, come on. A, the whole thing of fish and meat we weren't that excited about. Now, this is clearly what seemed to be a misprint. So for the longest time, I kind of said, until around 10 years ago, the Rapp family went to Chicago for the summer. And we went to the Adler Planetarium. And in the Adler Planetarium, they had this exhibit where the kids could put on robes and they could sit behind desks and pretend to be students in the 14th century. Cool. And they had there this 3 pages of a letter sent from a father in Toulouse to his son, who was in school at the time. And in it, it said, be very careful not to have milk and fish together because it will lead to leprosy. I kid you not. I still have a picture of it. I found eventually went back and found the letter, the original source. So
what's this guy's background?
What?
What's his background?
Dermatologist.
Uh-huh.
So maybe. So in fact, there is a possibility. I will admit this. Beis Yosef lived in the late 15th, early 16th century. It could have very well not been a misprint. It could have well been based on the science of the day, whatever that is. Very interesting. Some people, does anyone have this minhag that after you have fish on Shabbos, you're supposed to have a schnapps?
I know the customs. It's a good excuse for a l'chaim.
What? 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 Yeah.
No, it's an excuse for a l'chaim.
Right. So I remember. So there is such a custom out there. I remember many years ago, Rav Shechter came to Queens and he was eating lunch by my parents, and my father was so nervous. Rav Shechter's coming up. What am I supposed to do? So after the fish, he figured, oh, I should, maybe he has this custom. So he said to him, do you want a schnapps? So he said, no, thank you. The Rav Shechter said to my father, do you know why people drink schnapps after the fish? So my father said, yeah, to separate. You shouldn't have fish and meat together. He says, no, it has nothing to do with that. He said, the reason they have it is as follows. He says, you know the story of Yonah, right? Yonah swallows, gets swallowed by the fish.
Great fish.
Then he prays, and he gets out. So we swallow the fish. We don't want it to pray to get out, so we throw some schnapps on it so it'll get drunk so it can't pray.
I like that.
Right? So in fact, that is the reason for it. But in general, we assume, well, this aside, that fish is parv, right? That unlike chicken, which they made like meat, fish they did not make like meat. Those of you who are curious, grasshoppers, so Taimanim, Yemenites eat grasshoppers. Are they fleshiks?
I think they're parv.
What?
Protein.
They are protein, that is correct.
They're parv.
I'm glad we brought Brad the nutritionist here. What? They are parv, actually. They're shahakal.
Why are they parv?
What?
Because they're not meat.
Right, so they have the
fish.
Same category as fish.
Right, but they're not fishes.
They are not fishes.
They are not fishes.
Interesting question comes up again with this. So we said that you're allowed to cook milk and meat together if the meat isn't really meat. If the meat is chicken, you can cook it together. The Gemara also tells us that you're allowed to cook meat and milk together if the meat is a non-kosher animal.
Really?
Right.
And give it to someone else, for someone else.
Right, but I'm saying, right. Yeah. I mean this,
how
what?
Can I cook it in my house? I have to do it again
or else. Oh, you don't got to do it in your house.
I
would hope not.
You make a campfire.
Right? So.
Go to my neighbor. I want to cook this meat and milk together.
No.
After I sell you my aluminum pot, let's cook this together.
Let's fortrafe it. Right, so again, if you're in culinary school, if you're working in a restaurant, mm-hmm. Right? Right, these things come up, so it would not be a problem to use to cook non-kosher meat and milk together. Obviously, you can't eat it afterwards for many reasons, but this rule does not apply. There is a question, there is a major dispute on the topic of what if it's a kosher animal that was not shechted? Right? So that's probably the more common, right? So a cow. You go to McDonald's, they have hamburgers. The hamburgers hopefully are made out of cows. Okay?
Generally.
Right? Yeah. Right? If they ran out of horses, that's what they use. So they go, so now you have a hamburger. The hamburger's out of a kosher animal, but the animal, but the meat's not kosher because it wasn't shechted. Got it? Sure. There's going to be a test afterwards. You better make sure you understand it. Okay. What? So again, and meat can be non-kosher for two reasons, basically. One, it's a non-kosher animal, okay. Right? Like a pig. Or it could be a kosher animal, which wasn't shechted, which was killed a different way. Right? If you go to Purdue is selling chickens. Chickens are kosher. So can I buy a Purdue chicken? Do you buy Purdue, Beth? Why not? It's cheaper, you know.
It would be great if we could.
What? I didn't like the education.
They don't like the education. So the reason being is they do not shecht it. They do not prepare it in a kosher way. Okay, so that's the second way. So that is a question. So to take a kosher animal that's not kosher because it wasn't shechted and mix that with that, that's more of a problem. When it comes to the issue of milk, it's pretty simple. What is milk? I'll just make an overall comment that here in America, I believe most people are not careful what's called Chalav Yisrael. We are not, in the Rav household, are not careful for Chalav Yisrael. Why are we not careful for Chalav Yisrael? So why do we need Chalav Yisrael? So why do you need a Mashgiach ever? So you need a Mashgiach ever to confirm that the food is kosher. When it comes, right, we don't need a Mashgiach on the farm because, you look at it, it's a cucumber. It's kosher. You can buy a whole fish in any store whatsoever, because I don't need a mashgiach. I can look at it, even if I don't know what this fish is. If it's got fins and it's got scales,
it's good.
It's good, right? If they start cutting it, if it's fillets, that's a different story, right? But just if I look at it, I can see it's kosher, right? What about milk? Right, so milk potentially, so cow milk is kosher, but other animal milks are not kosher. Anything that comes from a kosher animal is kosher. Anything that comes from a non-kosher animal is not kosher, right? With very few exceptions. The most obvious exception being, what? Honey, right? Honey is a kosher food that comes from a non-kosher animal.
But I thought we're on milk here.
We are on milk, but in
just
general,
went to honey.
Right? We just mentioned in passing that rule of whatever, right? So again, if the milk comes from a cow, kosher. The milk comes from a pig, not kosher.
From a goat, right? Kosher.
Right. Very good.
From a lamb.
Good. Okay.
We got it.
Right. Rhinoceros, not kosher. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
If I buy a fish and they have taken the skin, whatever. There are some scales, you know, sometimes left over. They're noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told that that's okay.
Right. So again, that's why when you buy tilapia, on kosher tilapia, they leave on what's called a tag. They leave a small piece of skin on, so you can see. Now, tilapia in general has been a very tricky fish, because they have been using in the fillets. They have been particularly the ones that come from the Far East. Right, they've been using many other fish and calling them tilapia. Right, so for example, there was an issue with catfish. Catfish is not a kosher fish. Catfish is very popular down by the bayou, but they were producing catfish for a lot cheaper in Vietnam, and the fishermen in the bayou were getting killed on this. So therefore, they put heavy tariffs on catfish. So in order to avoid that, they started sending it over with different names. They called it grouper, or they called it tilapia. And with that, and since it was fillets, it all looked alike. And therefore, they did this in order to avoid the tariffs. Right, so that is why you've got to be very careful. If you get a box and it says tilapia on it, that doesn't do it. You actually need attached to it when we go and buy in ShopRite. Fish, there's always a little piece on, but you can ask the guy, okay, would you mind taking it off for me? Right? Okay, I saw it. Thank you.
When you buy it here,
where do you buy fish here?
In the grocery store.
What?
But
that's frozen. You buy.
You can buy fresh fish.
Right.
You can't buy salmon
or trout.
I have changed it. Until now, the VAT in Denver said you're not allowed to buy salmon with all skin because it could be another fish. I never believed that.
But okay.
Now the OU,
yeah.
The OU says
yeah.
You can buy salmon with all
skin. So it's very interesting. Salmon is the most interesting of fish in terms of buying. Salmon, Moshe Feinstein said you can buy salmon without skin on it. The only fish, he said, was salmon. Why?
Is it so distinctive?
Because it's the only pink fish out there. And therefore, there are other people, however, people took issue with it later on because nowadays, most of the fish we get is not wild fish, but rather it's farmed fish. Now, farmed fish, because it lives on a farm, right, so it grows overalls, but it doesn't turn pink. It's a whole different story. So because of that, so really, naturally, farmed fish is not pink. And they realize that people don't want to buy salmon that's not pink.
Why don't they just make it pink in the mix?
So they do. So they add color to it.
Ah.
Ah, so the question is, wait a second.
If you could add color
and make the salmon pink, can't they add
tilapia?
Couldn't I add it to catfish or swordfish and add it to that? So the truth of the matter is, the answer is no. Because the way they don't dump it in red number 40. That's not how they do it. But rather, they feed the fish something, then it absorbs into that. That will only work with salmon, supposedly.
Uh-huh.
Right? So therefore, the argument, a lot of people say that they're making that, oh, but now that it's colored, the logic of Rav Moshe doesn't apply anymore. That's not actually true, because supposedly this only works
with salmon fish.
So that is the reason why a lot of people will allow salmon as well. So that is the matter of this agreement, and that's why you'll get both sides of the argument. However, again, if you buy even a fillet, but they leave the skin on, then it's not a problem. Like, everyone would agree on that. They might take an issue with the knife that's being used,
yeah,
right? But in terms of being convinced that this is a kosher fish, if there's skin on it, I don't think anybody would argue. Again, they might argue on the knife, but they wouldn't argue on that.
Is there any way to shell fish that they make do it, they don't get
wrong,
or
no? No, the fish don't get... If somebody ever says to you, when I grow up, I want to be a fish shochet, tell me you should really consider another position.
Now tell them I have a bridge to sell them.
Mm-hmm. So that's the story with salmon. Salmon, because of this coloring issue, makes it very different than any other fish. Okay, the only issue that really comes up with milk is the issue of synthetic milk. Synthetic milk goes back a long way. They talk in the Gemara about cholov shekedim.
I don't know what synthetic milk is.
What? So almond milk. Almond milk, coconut milk, soy milk.
Those aren't milks. Exactly.
Milk. You never finished talking about why we don't do all these
wrong. Oh, that's right. Thank you. So, thank you. Right. You want to take over? So the...
So which way are you going?
Right. So let's go back to Chol of Yisrael. Thank you. So in terms of Chol of Yisrael, so the idea is that really, technically, you should require a somebody to watch and confirm that this is just cow milk. However, in the United States of America, we have something called the USDA, and under the USDA, if you just label something as milk, it's got to be cow milk. It can't be anything else. And in the event that you get caught selling any other type of milk as cow milk,
you're in trouble,
right? So Reb Moshe Feinstein wrote that that's good enough for him, that the USDA is a good enough mashkiach, and therefore that's fine. You can have any type of milk, even without a hashkacha, and get most major hashkach organizations agree with that. The OU will, of course, allows non-Chol of Yisrael milk. Star K from Baltimore does not allow it, so they made a new second hashkacha called the Star D, which they do for non-Chol of Yisrael products. So if you ever see the Star D, that's actually the Star K, indicating that we don't want our K next to non-Chol of Yisrael, so therefore we're going to send the D over there for that. So that is the idea. Now, that's important to note because the USDA is limited in its jurisdiction. It does not have the jurisdiction outside the United States. So that being the case, if a person finds themselves traveling, particularly through Europe, you do have to buy Chol of Yisrael. Because these laws of milk being cow milk do not apply in other countries. No, Israel is the opposite on the other end. All milk in Israel is Chol of Yisrael, because that's what the farmers are. So it's interesting. I've seen silly Americans show up to go to seminary or for the year and ask for the Chol of Yisrael. And the guy with the long beard stares at him. What? So in Israel, there's no such thing. Everything is Chol of Yisrael. But if you're in Europe, you specifically have to buy Chol of Yisrael. Yes?
But for some people in Israel, the regular tshuva is not good enough. They need to have tenna or atara.
Milk? Milk or yogurt? I think yogurts. I think that's different. I think it's the other ingredients. But I think that anyone would buy a bag of milk from anywhere. Right. Right, I think they might have an issue with the Milky, right? They might not buy the Milky from there, but they would buy. But in terms of, I remember when I first went to Israel, I was very confused because everything that you, I don't know if it's still it used to be percentages. Right? It's 4% and 7% and 11%. Like, you need a PhD in math to make a milkshake. It was just so confusing, you know, to figure out what was cottage cheese, what was that. Just everything was all numbers. So that's in terms of that. So in terms of most people rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein. We rely on Moshe Feinstein in our house. We have non-Chol of Yisrael. When it comes to the outside of the United States, though, you cannot rely on that. That's only something because we have the laws in America that say, I think Canada has the same laws. I think Canada has the same laws, but I think that's the extent of it. What? I don't know about South Africa. Oh, so some people assume you can't rely on the government, that the government is not a good hashkacha. This issue, to what extent can you rely on non-hashkachas for hashkachas, is very interesting. So, for example, Carmel wine. So Carmel wine is made in Israel, and as such, they have some extra rules. They have to take off truma, they have to take off meiser, there's a certain percentage that they have to take off. And if they don't take it off, it's not kosher. The OU relies on the Israeli IRS to be the mashkiach for that. Because they write on their taxes that we have a certain amount of losses every year because what we have to pour off for trumas and maaseres. The government isn't going to take their word for it. They're going to send auditors down there to make sure it's going. So the OU assumes that that's good enough. Right? If this guy might be a non-religious person,
you don't know what he's doing.
Right? No, I mean the IRS inspector is not he's standing there, but they will definitely periodically pop
in
to make sure that the right taxes are being paid. So that's the same idea, really. That you have, the USDA is not a Jewish organization. You know, it's one of the very few organizations that isn't run by the Jews, right? But still, we rely. Other people will say no. That in fact, a non-Jew doesn't have ne'emanus, that they cannot be relied on. You can't rely on the USDA more than you can rely on the farmer, and therefore you require a chal of Yisrael. There is a wide range of opinions as to how important chal of Yisrael is for those who follow it. So, let's say someone comes to my house, and I know they keep Chol of Yisrael, so I make them a lasagna using Chol of Yisrael cheese. But what about my pots? What about my plates?
Right.
What about my oven?
Right. Your
kashrut isn't good enough?
What? Good? That's fine. More for the rest of us. I'm not so sensitive. Right?
So they couldn't eat from your plates and your pots? It all holds.
So again, there are people that hold that it's actually not kosher, and therefore it'll be a problem with other people, not that much. Chaya's uncle, who is a well-respected rabbi in the Midwest, keeps Chol of Yisrael. It's very interesting. He's a rabbi in Milwaukee. So Milwaukee's Wisconsin. Wisconsin's moniker is?
Cheese.
America's Dairyland, I believe it is.
They're cheeseheads.
Right. That's a Lambo. They're cheeseheads. So he Mizbaka Chol of Yisrael. The only way they can get Chol of Yisrael in Milwaukee, believe it or not, is it's produced in Milwaukee. It gets shipped to Chicago, and then it gets shipped back. Right, it's the oddest thing.
Mama.
Right, but Chaya's grandmother, who was a wonderfully religious woman, uses friendship. Right, she was not makbid on Chol of Yisrael, and he ate in her house without a problem. He pointed it out to me that he held it's a chumrah. That this is a stringency he accepts upon himself, but not to the extent that, he's not going to use the pots and pans. He's not going to show up. What? There's nothing to do with these.
So he won't eat in your house?
No, he will eat in my house. Just like he ate in
I got it.
If he doesn't eat in my house, he holds because it's not kosher. It wouldn't have anything to do with this.
Got it.
So that's a range, right? Some people, that's it. It's as good as eating treif. And then when we discussed at one point the concept of O-U-D-E, right, this comes up as well. The O-U got rid of the O-U-D-E.
Yeah, I don't see it.
Right? It's confusing to a lot of people because that's what, they don't know that Haagen-Dazs sorbet is pounds.
Right.
It's pounds, but they say.
Right, so the reason they got rid of it is because people never really understood it. People always thought that O-U-D-E means that it's par but made in a milchig container. That's not, that actually wasn't true, because the truth of the story, as I understand it, is as follows. So let's take your case, Haagen-Dazs sorbet. Haagen-Dazs sorbet is made on the same equipment as Häagen-Dazs ice cream. I can buy, right? They'll run a dulce de leche, and then right afterwards they'll run a mango sorbet. But in between, they're going to clean it. They're not going to just run one after the other. You're not going to end up with creamsicle at the end, right? What they do is they're going to take hot steam and they're going to clean down the machinery. Now, using hot steam to clean the machinery makes the machinery parve. And therefore, when you run the run of the mango sorbet, it's actually parve. So why not just say it's parve? So the reason is as follows. We had mentioned Thursday night, and we'll get back to it probably soon here, is that when you have to kosher something, if what was absorbed in it was not kosher,
it's the way you expel it.
Right? You've got to wait 24 hours before you can kosher it. So if you tell me that the milk in the dulce de leche that was really not kosher, koshering it doesn't help because you didn't wait 24 hours. And then when I run the mango sorbet through it, its status is?
Dairy.
Yeah.
No.
If they didn't wait 24, it's treif.
It's treif.
Sorry.
Actually, right. If I can't, so again, basically, O-U-D-E meant that in the event that you were careful with Chol Yisrael, it wasn't kosher, but if you're not careful with Chol Yisrael, then it's parv. According to nobody, and nobody really understood that. Because, again, they wanted to put some mark on it to indicate, if you care about Chol Yisrael, avoid this. But on the other hand, they didn't want to...
Like, in other words, avoid it not just after Leisha, avoid it period.
Right, because this is right. That's what I understand. Anything that's OUD, unless you know otherwise, you have to assume is not Chol Yisrael, right? That's the OU policy, right? So therefore, eventually, they just went into the OUD for it, but therefore, many things that are OUD are practically parv.
Like the Oreo cookies.
So there are 9 different types of Oreo cookies at last check. I think 2 of them are parv, 7 of them are actually milchik. So, and it changes.
So we can't make a list
what?
To our membership so people know.
Well, we can make
which
a list for
two?
Today. We can make what it is.
Which
but,
are the
you know,
two that are parv?
I'm not such an expert in Oreo cookies, you know.
The regular ones.
But,
regular.
Right. Right. But, you know, the double stuffed.
Yeah, I don't eat those.
No?
No.
Okay. Just those fruity things.
I don't eat those
either. Yeah, right. So the... So... That is the reason, because again, it's a question of Chol of Yisrael. How seriously do you take Chol of Yisrael? Right? There are people out there, like Chai's uncle, I imagine, who probably would eat the sorbet, because the idea being that he's makbid on Chol of Yisrael, but he doesn't care about the pots. Right? He's not that concerned about it. As opposed to Chabad, which are more makbid, they would, in fact, not touch the stuff. So that's the wide range that you have within this. Getting back to synthetic milk, for those of us who call it milk. So, right. So the Gemara says that you're not allowed to have synthetic milk and meat together because of Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin means it looks bad.
I know him. Morris's eye,
as we call him. So Maris Ayin, there's a question as to why Maris Ayin is a problem. There's 2 ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is people will see me doing it and they'll think that I'm a bad person. Another concern is, no, they'll think I'm a good person and you're allowed to eat milk and meat together because look, the rabbi's doing it. It must be okay.
Bad guy.
Right? So either saying I can't believe it. Now, that happens to be important. There's a discussion that comes up. So let's say I'm at a business meeting and I have to go to a non-kosher restaurant. Should I keep my yarmulke on or should I take my yarmulke off? What?
Keep it on.
Why off, Marsha? Well, then they'll see it. They'll see it's not bad enough. I'm seeing a treif restaurant. I took off my yarmulke. Of course, I'm eating something.
Exactly. Then you're in real trouble.
Right. Right. So depending on what you're more concerned about, that's
a double-edged sword.
Right. That's a problem. So so because of this, you can have synthetic milk and. Now, unless somehow you indicate that that's what's going on, so the suggestion in the Shulchan Aruch is that you spread some almonds on the table. So if you spread almonds on the table, people will know it's almond milk. So I remember growing up when non-dairy creamer first came out, right? So they were saying at the time that you have to serve it in the container.
On the table.
Right? So therefore, people would know that's what it is. Now, over time, things change. So I think nowadays people understand there's something called non-dairy creamer, etc. And therefore, nowadays it's, right, you can put it into the nice silver thing and it wouldn't be a problem. Interesting note that I think at this point, the overwhelming majority of almond milk or coconut milk is Milchix, actually.
D.
Right, O-U-D.
Why is it D?
I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs. I haven't asked my contacts.
Well, then why are they dairy? She's saying there's no milk in them.
So again, I don't know if it has to do with...
I mean, there's cashew milk now, and, you know, there are a lot more.
Right, so the ice creams tend to be parv, right? But the milks themselves, not all of them, there are parv ones. The boxes tend to be parv. The containers that you... The boxes you get off the shelf tend to be parv. The containers you get out of the freezer, out of the fridge, tend to be Milchix.
Some of them, not soy milk.
What?
Soy milk.
It's all parv? Right, but coconut and almond and cashew,
right?
Right, you know, but the ice creams are parv. What?
I thought they were all parv.
No, right.
I'm using them that much
because you think they're not milk. I know we want
these. Does that mean that you don't when you say you can't have them because of my diet? Does that mean like if I'm making a roast for whatever reason, I pour soy milk in there? No one sees me. The guests haven't arrived.
Not a problem.
Not a problem.
Right. Right. So
or
that,
you can put almonds on the table.
But she's soy milk, silly girl.
Put soybeans on the table.
Right. Okay, we're running out of time here. Technically, according to the Torah, there is no problem to eat milk and meat. I can have myself a bite of a hamburger and then I can drink down the milk. That's not a problem according to the Torah. That's only rabbinic in terms of that, right? Because it says in the Pasuk, lo... Tavashel, it can't be cooked together.
Boil.
That is the issue. Anything less than that is only rabbinic. So, therefore, based on that, you have to come up with a decision what makes cooking. If I would just even mix them together, if I have some milk, I would pour some milk into the chicken soup because I want it to be creamier, right? Right? You don't recommend it? It's much better that way. Right? That's how they do it at Campbell's. So that would only be a problem mid the Rabbanan. How hot does it have to get for it to be considered cook? So the magic words are Yad Soledes Bo. Yad Soledes Bo means if you would touch it, your hand would pull away. Not burn, you would pull away. What does that mean in terms of numbers? So Rav Moshe Feinstein thought it was 104 degrees Fahrenheit. That would be already a possibly hot enough. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach thought definitely not less than 110 degrees. And there are some opinions which say not less than 120 degrees. So, common question. I am washing my Milchix dishes and I used my Fleishik sponge. Right? That's like a once a month, Shiloh. So the question I tend to ask is,
how hot was the water?
Were you wearing gloves? If you weren't wearing gloves, the water wasn't that hot that you couldn't put your hand in it. Right?
So would you just say throw the sponge away?
No.
You wouldn't even say that?
No.
Okay.
Oftentimes it's my husband was doing the dishes and so I'd actually throw the husband away.
Okay.
But but nothing worse than that. Right, so that is what's called the Yad Soledes. In order for something to be cooked, in order for something to get absorbed, in order for us to have any problems, there has to be some heat involved. If there's no heat involved, there's no problem. Again, that doesn't, as we said, rabbinically, I can't eat it together, but in terms of anything being cooked together, that has to be that.
What about a dishwasher?
That's hot.
A dishwasher is very hot. Right, I want.
Perhaps
we will discuss dishwashers at length next week, but the long and short of it is we assume that dishwashers that are plastic or porcelain on the side can't be koshered, and it's a problem. However, if it's stainless steel, then. What do you mean? All. So, right. So again, you can change the racks if they can always get new racks if it comes down to that. But I think most stainless steel ones don't come with plastic.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So. What? It's fine. If you do it accidentally, it's fine. We'll discuss it a little bit more next week. Okay. Let's just do one or two. Our time is just about up. Let's just do one or two concepts that we'll be able to have them behind us next week already. When it comes to mixing milk and meat together, again, it has to be that the milk or meat is doing something positive. If the, let's say, the milk I'm adding to the meat is spoiled, and therefore it makes it worse, that's called nosein tam lifgam, and that is, at least according to the Torah, not a problem. Okay, so that's one concept I wanted to do. The other concept is that I want to talk about was what's called taroves, something being batel, meaning that in the event, we all know that if you have 60 times as much milk as meat, or meat as milk, then if it happened accidentally, that's okay. That the rule of it being batel b'shishim, having 60 times as much, that only applies to liquids. If I have solids, let's say I have kosher salamis and non-kosher salamis, and they're unwrapped, so I can't look at there, and they get mixed together, what's the rule? How many kosher salamis do I need compared to non-kosher salamis?
A lot more.
How would you know?
So I know how many there were.
Oh, you do know how many there were.
Right? So if it's a majority kosher, you can eat them.
Even if one is treif.
Even if seven are treif.
Right? Even if seven, if eight are kosher and seven are treif, you can basically...
Yes.
Well, you don't know which one you're eating. You can't say, there's a treif, but I've been dying to have it. What?
That's odd.
Right? So that's called batel berov. When it's yavesh ber yavesh, then even if it's a majority, that is enough. Okay, we will continue with this next week.